This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Bill Henderson. He's the founder and editor of the wonderful and long-lasting Pushcart Press, based in Long Island. And I have known Bill, I've known you for a really long time. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, it's been a long, long time.
Well, I think I think that we met around the time that you started, and maybe just after. You started in 1972, if I remember that correctly.
And that's when I started the press, right? We were registered with the Yonkers New York Business Association as Pushcart Book Press in 1972.
So and when you started, what was the impetus? What got you started to be an independent publisher?
Well, it goes back a while to a novel I spent a long time, probably 10 years writing. I went to Paris and did the whole thing in a garret and put my heart into a little book called The Kid That Could. And when it came time to try to find a publisher, there was none. Some nice comments, but nothing. So I was very, very extremely frustrated and published a book myself with an uncle under a pseudonym. We started a little publishing company called Nautilus Books. That was the first precursor of Pushcart. And I learned a lot. It was in North Plainfield, New Jersey. My Uncle Howard and I started this company and published six titles, and plus Luke Walton's Kid That Could. Got reviewed in the New York Times Book Review. Not a very nice review, but it was a far cry from being totally rejected. So I decided to tell other people that you didn't need commercial publishers, including vanity publishers, by the way. Far too much vanity publishing going on these days. But especially, you don't need vanity publishers. You don't need anybody but yourself and some stationery and a phone. Don't even need that, perhaps. And you can publish your own book. So I published a book called The Publish It Yourself Handbook, which is a collection of inspirational pieces, really, still in print, out of date by a long shot, but inspirational still. Stuart Brand of the Whole Earth Catalog and Leonard and Wolf and Virginia Woolf published their own works, and a whole mess of people, a sailboat how-to guy, a cookbook, poetry, novels, et cetera, were in the Publishers Yourself Handbook. The book took off. I couldn't keep it in print. It sold 75,000 copies from that studio apartment in Yonkers, over four editions in many years. But that was the start, just the basic frustration of not being able to get my novel published and my anger, which was fruitful because I wanted to tell other writers who were in my shape that they didn't need commercial publishers and certainly should not mess around with vanity publishers.
Yeah, so which was, at that time, you were kind of part of the kind of efflorescence of do-it-yourselfism, you know, the kind of counterculture movement, although I don't think you saw yourself as a counterculture person, did you?
No, I didn't see myself as anything. I just saw myself as a person with a necessity to tell other writers that what the good news was. And the odd thing was, as I was an editor at Doubleday from 1970 to 72, approximately, and I was inside the belly of the beast and saw how corporations work, corporate publishing. Doubleday at the time was a huge publisher, 750 titles a year, I think the largest in the world. They had their own printing plant and fulfillment on Garden City, Long Island, and it was a big, big corporation with lots of money, and I didn't trust it for a minute because I realized that once the money started to go away, my job would go away and any books I loved would go too. So eventually it didn't work out with Doubleday. I was fired, as I should have been. And I went to work for a few other commercial places, but eventually I ended up at Pushcart full-time with the Pushcart Prize. In 1975, I began the Pushcart Prize with the help of many outstanding contributing editors, founding editors, really, Joyce Carol Oates and Reynolds Price, and a whole list of wonderful people who came to my idea and said, this is a pretty terrific idea. Let you go run with it, Henderson. So I did. And the result was astonishing, that the annual anthology published in the next year in 1976 was a huge hit. I didn't expect it for a second. I didn't know what would happen, but we found a lot of things in little presses such as your own, David, that were absolutely terrific. And everybody loved the Pushcart Prize, and even the commercial world did, because I think they were sick and tired of the shoddiness of publishing books for money and using authors to make money. I think it's a rather sad way to live, to be parasites on authors. Yes.
Well, the Pushcart Prize, as I remember when you instigated it, was, I thought, a very powerful thing. It gave legitimacy and recognition to a really wide range of small independent publishers who continually felt marginalized, as you know, ignored, as you well know, you know, that it was very difficult to get anybody in the mass media or literary media, the established media, to pay attention. So I think a big part of what made your efforts so popular among publishers certainly was that you were giving them recognition and an opportunity to be considered legitimate.
Yeah, but it's a huge problem that so many good things were lost to the general public who didn't know anything about these presses. And, of course, the frustration for writers who put their whole heart into a poem or a short story, and nobody knows about it, and nobody knows about the presses that publish it, it's just an amazing problem that the Pushcart Prize tries to solve every year. Of course, can't even come close to representing all the great work that's out there. And there's a lot of junk, of course, too. But well over 1,000 presses last year contributed to Pushcart Prize number 40. We picked about 69 selections this year in a 650-page book. But it's just the problem, continuing problem in this culture, that money talks and quality is not seen and not read, and nobody cares. But the Pushcart Prize has tried to make people care, and a lot of the people really have. That's why it's continued to thrive for 40 years, which seems like such a long, long time.
Well, I mean, 40 years is a long time, and I think it's striking. Yeah. I'm impressed with your ability to continue to do this and to stay excited and meaningful. I think, you know, it's clearly the Pushcart Prize is still important and still meaningful. It still performs the same role that it did 40 years ago, which is to recognize work that you would not. I mean, first of all, no one could possibly read everything that's out there. Knowing. It is even a question of whether the publishers and magazines are ignored or not. It's just that there's so many, and it's so difficult to know the extent of what's going on. So, you know, in one way, now you act as this wonderful curation point. Imperfect, as you said, you can't represent everything that's really good, but at least it's better than not knowing anything. So I could sit down with a Pushcart Prize, as I've done, and discover every single time a publisher or an author that I'd never heard of before and probably would have not had any way of learning about except through you.
Yeah, it's a sampling, I think, one way to think about the Pushcart, a sampling of what's out in the small press world. And in the back of every edition is an index of the publishers who have sent in work with addresses, so you can follow up if you like to. And there's also an index of the 2,000-plus works that have appeared in the Pushcart Prize over 40 years. Also the 500, these are not exact numbers, but 500 or so presses that have appeared in the Pushcart Prize over these years. Some of them are not around anymore. They tend to come and go, but some of them are. And it's just, I'm kind of a cheerleader, I think is the way I see myself, for the writer out there and for the editors who make no money and are totally unsung and ignored. And that's a very depressing place to be for a writer who wants to address the whole universe. And the universe shrugs its shoulders and says, we don't give a damn. I know this personally because when that first novel I was describing that I worked so long and hard on and put my soul into and had it flung back at me from the commercial world. So I've lived that life. I know what it feels like, and I just like to encourage writers to not give up, which is very hard in this world of big money and chatter.
Well, and so many, I think today, obviously, there is this a radical change in the way that writers relate to publishers and the ready availability of self-publishing software and platforms and, you know, different mechanisms and ways of getting books out much more easily than was possible 40 years ago. I assume that makes it harder for you as well, because while there are probably many, many good books being published, self-published, or along the lines that you did yourself, there are so many more that are not really all that good. It must be more difficult in some ways to actually track and figure out what is good. Although I guess in some ways you have a self-selecting process, because if I want to be in the Pushcart Anthology, I have to send you my book, as a press. I have to enter, and then you have to pick me. So for those who may not know about you or who don't realize what the process is, they kind of self-select out.
Yeah, every press that wants to can make nominations every year, up to 6 nominations per press, 3 poems and 3 short stories or whatever combination. So everybody's welcome, but they are selecting, the editors are selecting from their work before they send it in, and then we select from that.
Right.
So it pares it down, but funny you should bring it up. I just came back from the post office, and there were 4 tubs of mail waiting for me, which I'm now trying to open and sort out. It is the deadline for the Pushcart Prize nominations was December 1st postmark. So there's just a ton of stuff, as you say, just an awful lot of stuff. And it's maybe even a problem of success that there's so many writers now publish their own stuff, which I wonder about sometimes, because I think writers are not very good judges of their own things. I think everybody should put their work in a drawer for a year before they try to publish it. But now it seems everybody just is throwing it out into the universe to see what happens. I think things should be allowed to wait and get a distance on them. But there's an awful lot of publishing going on now. And of course, the problem, as you said, is clutter. There's just so much, it's hard to find the good stuff, but we do it. I mean, it jumps out at you right away when something is worthwhile. There's never any doubt that greatness will be found.
I agree with you. No, I agree. And I think that's something that every writer should recognize and accept, you know, that if it's good, somebody's going to find out about it. Somehow or another. I think that I read something by the writer Elsa Ferrante. I don't know whether you're familiar with her. I actually have not read her books, but I want to, having read this. She's Italian, and I think when she did her first book, she brought it to the publisher, a manuscript they'd already agreed to publish. She handed it to the editor, and she said, I'm done. It's up to the universe now. I'm not going to I don't mark it. I don't help it. I don't talk about it. That's your job and the job of readers. You know, if somebody likes my book, they're going to read it. And if they love it, they're going to tell people about it, and that's it. And, and I kind of like that confidence and also acquiescence that says I wrote it, but it's up to somebody else to judge it. And to understand it, and if it becomes something that people want to read, then they will. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
word of mouth. It's word of mouth is the most tremendous advertising. You can advertise a book like crazy, but nobody will buy it. It's when your friend tells you that this is a terrific book, and the word gets around. That's what sells books. You cannot make a bestseller. You can perhaps put it in a lot of bookstores, but it's just going to come back at you.
No, I agree.
Pretty much.
Most of the time. I mean, there are some things that large commercial publishers have figured out how to do, but I agree with you. But what is the selection process look like these days? How many people read the submissions and make the choices, or, you know, and help you do this, or do you do it all yourself?
Well, I do a lot myself. I read for a steady 2 months. That's all I do. But I also have 3 poetry editors this year, or usually up from 2. For the last 40 years, we've had 2. But it's just overwhelming. They can't do it, even though they have 4 months to look through all the poetry. So this year, we have 3 poetry editors, and they're 4 prose screeners, and myself, and that's it. Of course, all the stuff is screened before it comes in by the editors who are making the nominations, and also our contributing editors are another stream that comes into the Pushcart Prize. Contributing editors, anybody who has been in the book in the past 40 years is a lifetime contributing editor. If they find something they love, they can nominate it, and we have about 200 of those every year, 200 plus. So there are two streams coming in, and it just comes right here in my house, and we have a lot of paper flying around for a while.
And what do you do now? What do you do with all the books when you're done? Do you give them to a local library?
Well, I have a little bookstore up in Maine where I flee from this Long Island place in East Hampton because it becomes overrun with fun seekers, let's put it nicely, with bad manners. And so I go to a little place on the coast of Maine where I build a cabin with my bare hands, and my wife and I and my daughter spend a lot of time there. And I have a little bookstore that I built with my bare hands right on the road. It's a kind of an overlooking the sea and Bar Harbor in the distance. And I sell some books, so that, and often the books are free, especially little magazines that come in as samples, and they're given away. So that's what happens to many of the books. But I've had the smallest bookstore in the world, I call it. I used to rent a place down in the little village. It was called Sedgwick Village, around Blue Hill, Deer Isle area. And for 10 years, I ran the smallest bookstore in the world. And then I made it smaller when I built the bookstore up on the hill. So now it's still 9x12, and we have about 500 titles or something. You get a lot of books in a small bookstore. So it's the smallest bookstore in the world, Pushcart Press Bookstore in Sedgwick, Maine. Open end of June till end of September.
So, and you have, is it people in the community who know about you, or is it people driving by? How do people find you?
Mostly it's just tourists coming up for the view. I bought some land up there, a few acres, with a terrific view of the ocean and the blueberry fields. So it's on the map. You can look on your map, if anybody has a map anymore, and you'll see that it's recommended for its scenic view. And they come up and they're astonished to see a little bookstore in the woods. It's bear country. This is coyote country. And turkeys all around, And one guy wrote a little notepad out there for people to check in and leave messages. He said he thought it was a mirage. He's driving down the road. It's a little bookstore, a mirage.
So do you sit in the bookstore every day or most days?
Well, my cabin is nearby. I keep an eye on it. But it's mostly an honor system. There's a tin can there. And if you want to buy a book, you put your money in the tin can.
Wow.
And that's it. And I don't think many people don't steal books anyway, If they want to read books, they're not going to bother to steal it. Most of them are used books, and for $2, $5, you're not going to try to sneak out, get my dog after you.
Well, it sounds great. It actually makes me, that description of it makes me want to come and see it. So maybe I'll have to make the journey to Maine at some point to see your store.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So now Pushcart Prize, the prize book, is not the only book you publish.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I do other books whenever there's a little money left over, which is not frequent. But I started something, a ding-a-ling idea called the Editor's Book Award, when back in my Manhattan days, we were having a gala dinner with some people. Editors and commercial publishers, they're all complaining now that the sales department would kill their one favorite books and manuscripts that they wanted to publish because they have no marketing appeal. So I started something called the Editor's Book Award, in which editors select books that the sales manager has killed, and send it to me, and I pick the favorite outcast and publish it. So there have been 23 titles in that category.
You do that once a year?
Well, every year. It's now not every year, because I don't find anything that astonishing. A lot of them just go to Amazon or something and give up. But Rick Moody's book, who was first published in the Editor's Book Award, other people have received a bounce from this. And sometimes they've even had books bought by the publishers that rejected them for paperback or whatever.
Well, you get to do the hard work for them, and then they get to reap the reward.
Yeah. But there have been some wonderful titles published in that program. And let's say I'm looking at a list of these titles. One was The Adventures of Jeremiah Diamond in a Novel of Old East Hampton, a wonderful book by the editor of the local paper, who was well-connected and had died. And his after I got to town, and his wife, widow, bought the manuscript to me, and I published it. A beautiful little book about what it was like to live on Long Island Sound in the 1860s, which we know well, the Sound. There's so many titles. Here's another collection of short stories called Eye Stone by J.R. MacDonald, the book of Scottish Cape Breton stories, just beautiful, beautiful stories. Nobody wants to do them. Who buys short stories, says the sales manager. On and on like that. So that's kept me busy. And we had, sometimes there's a little bit of cash left over. I published a book called The Writer's Quotation Book, which amazingly took off and sold in the Penguin edition and the Pushcart edition, about 70,000 copies over several editions. So, and the only bestseller I've ever had is something I concocted in about 3 weeks called Rotten Reviews. Rotten Reviews is a little collection of really lousy reviews of classic works, such as Melville, Whitman, etc., that had the crap beat out of them by the critics of their time. And it's a kind of a get back at these critics in their immortal stupidity. This little book was 2 weeks on the Washington Post bestseller list, Rotten Reviews. It was a huge hit. But it was something that was very easy to research in the library, and I just put it together, and there it goes. You can spend 10 years writing the great American novel, and nobody wants it, and spend 3 weeks in the local library dredging up lousy reviews of classics, and you get a bestseller.
So
life is unfair.
So the books that sell well, though, are subsidizing some of the other ones, I take it.
Somewhat, yeah. Or vice versa. But we now have found a foundation, the Pushcart Prize Fellowships, which actually has a couple of patrons. And in fact, there are 60 people who make annual donations. And it keeps us going, keeps me alive, gives me a little tiny salary. I buy some spaghetti and tuna fish and keep going, you know.
Well, I did want to ask you about the nonprofit status. It's something that I think a lot of publishers literary publishers who have been around for a long time frequently do become 501c3 nonprofits,
right,
so that they can receive donations, and you know, they're
exactly.
It's kind of appropriate to their, you know, to the function that it's, you know, like nonprofit theater.
Right.
What year did you recognize that was good for you and establish Pushcart as a nonprofit?
I think it was about 2000, in around there. It was increasingly harder to pay the bills, the printing bills, let alone live. with the pushcart price. So I started the 501c3, and it was hard. Hard to get people to donate at first. In fact, I'd given up. No matter how great the reviews or how important the pushcart prize was, the pushcart prize fellowships was not going on anywhere until a friend who happened to live down the street sent a check for $15,000, and we were rolling. And ever since, we've been able to come up with enough money to pay the bills around here. But it's been very, very tough. We've been hanging on by our fingernails for a long, long time, but it's more fun that way. We don't like an easy street around here.
Right. You like the challenge part, but I think that it's probably true that, you know, being nonprofit brings with it a certain amount of structure and then requirement for raising money, which is time consuming. You know, it's not like being nonprofit is a magic solution to all the problems of being a struggling literary press.
No, it's very hard. I'm really lousy at asking people for anything, even a pencil. But, just to ask people for money is very hard for me to do. But somehow people have responded. And the worst part is not the legal thing of setting it up. That was pretty easy. Or getting a board of directors. Our friend Bill Strawn is on the board with Pat Strawn. The board of directors of the Pushcart Prize Fellowships. The worst thing is just cranking yourself up and go out there and with a tin cup and say, right, please, please, please.
No, it's very difficult. Yeah, I think it's almost like being a politician. You know, the politicians are good at asking for money, but regular people are not. It's just very, it's very hard.
It's tough to do. Yeah.
And so, do you do any, you know, is there like you don't do a fundraising gala or dinner or anything like that?
No, I'm really lousy at that stuff. You know, I just hit the mails with a good letter with all the reviews and a plea. And sometimes people come out of nowhere and say, I want to help you out. And since we're about 15 years into it now, we have a pretty steady income, which is very helpful. Especially when you're getting a bit older, as we are, David, you have certain expenses, and nobody wants to hire you for anything.
Nope.
You're absolutely on your own. And my wife has a part-time job at the local TV station, local nonprofit TV thing. So we survive, and my daughter helps out now and then, and she's in film production in New York, so we're okay, but it's not easy, not at all easy, especially when you do the pushcart prize every year, which is 650 pages. The bill for printing such a book is incredible.
How many copies do you print of the pushcart prize now?
Well, this year we printed 8,000, and that's a whopping bill for paper and printing and such things. So it keeps coming. People keep responding. We just got a box review in Publishers Weekly again, and the last 2 years have been starred in boxed reviews, and it's a big event in New York a couple weeks ago, put on by my friend Phil Schultz, the Pulitzer Prize poet, around something called the Writer's Studio, and we had Zadie Smith and Cullen McCann and Ben Marcus and John Galassi reading at the event, which was pretty well sold out. And it was, so people respond. It means a lot to me, to tell you the truth, because a lot of the day is sitting here with my two dogs and waiting for the phone to ring. So, but it's nice to see somebody cares. It gets to be, you wonder if it's over or not, but it's never been over for 40 years, so why worry? It still means an awful lot. The Pushcart Prize means an awful lot to people.
I think it does.
This always is very, very heartening.
So are the sales relatively steady? I mean, has that...
Yeah, they are. They are steady. When Borders went out of business, we took a hit. Books are distributed by Norton, W.W. Norton Company, by the way, who are terrific people and managed to care about this little project. owned by their own employees and such. So, but when Borders went bottomed out and went away, we lost about 700 copies, 800 copies. So that was a hit. And of course, the whole publishing industry was in crisis for, has been for many years as the independent bookstores go out of business. And we, sales were dropping quietly, but now they're quietly coming back. So we're resurging and we're almost back to where we were before Borders went out of business. So it's unkillable. The thing just will not die.
Well,
which is very, very nice.
Yeah, and presumably a lot of libraries buy it. Who, you know, they're going to buy it every year. It's pretty valuable if you're a library.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
But I assume I was going to ask if the relative dearth of independent stores has made a difference. And because, you know, thinking back to what it looked like, the book industry, say, of 1985, 30 years ago, very different kind of distribution of sales than it is today.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a lot easier for a small publisher to exist just on sales, and as you probably remember, because if you get a nice review in Library Journal, for instance, you're assured about 2,000 books will sell, or 1,000, or whatever, at least to pay the printing bill. But now it's a review in Library Journal or whatever. The libraries are investing more in electronic equipment than anything. And so that killed a real backbone of sales for Pushcart. So it's harder. It's harder now, especially to introduce new titles. I just published a book, a memoir by a lady who lives across the street from me, Linda Coleman, called Radical Descent, about her life in the 70s as an underground kind of weather woman person. And beautifully, beautifully written with great heart. And one of the best memoirs I've ever read, and it got a couple of reviews here and there and sold 700 copies. It should have sold 700,000 copies, but it's very hard to make a dent, to get people to pay attention. So that's the way it is, but we struggle onward.
Well, I think that's true for everyone, that, but in some ways, you know, even though it is harder now, in other ways, it's easier. So it's kind of interesting. Some of the technology of book production has certainly streamlined the process. I'm sure you remember a lot of the changes book production has gone through over these 40 years. It's
been
remarkable.
Now you can do a short run, 500 copies for almost nothing.
That's right.
And get it out there and get the reviews and sample the market and. That's a lot easier than printing 3,000 copies of a first novel and getting 2,500 returned, you know, which
right.
has happened.
Oh, yeah. You know? I think that's happened to a lot of publishers.
Yeah,
So I wanted to ask you just to go back to the Pushcart Prize for a minute in terms of what, and this may be really hard, to do in any kind of coherent way, but so you've had this experience now and probably maybe not completely a unique experience, but certainly an unusual one of having read consistently over a long period of time the output of independent publishers. So, you have 40 years of consistently reading every single year a large number of pieces of work published by independent publishers. And if you, and I'm sure that you can say that there have been variation, there have been changes, but would you be able to characterize in a, you know, without, you might not be able to do it without writing this as an essay, but, you know, how has it changed from 1976 to 2016 in terms of, you know, kind of the literary landscape? What do you see different or having changed or changing or not changing over that period of time?
Well, certainly the volume of little magazines and small presses has grown incredibly, a lot because of technology, I guess. But there's a lot more people out there doing it. There's a bit of a clutter problem, too much, which you can wade through. But the quality of the work has improved incredibly. I think writing today is so much better than it was in 76. Then a 450-page Pushcart Prize was a good size. That about summed it up. Now I do 650 pages. We should be doing 850. There's so much good work out there. It's just the improvement in quality over 40 years has been astonishing and very, very heartening. People haven't given up to the glitter and the glitz of the commercial world, and they don't consider themselves to be content providers, as many writers are talked about these days, and certainly not just consumers. We have a greater respect for ourselves, I think, and the small press is where it's at, encouraging people to dream and think and do really good work, and damn it, they're doing it. So I'm very impressed on how much better things are now against all odds that things would go down the drain. They're not going down the drain, at least in the small press world.
Yeah, no, I think that's significant. Maybe it's possible that as the commercial opportunities have declined, there's been migration. You know, the writers who might have been published by a large trade house are obviously not going to stop writing just because they can't get published. You know, like your series of editors' choices is an indicator that the work is out there. You know, and it's kind of interesting to me in one way, and that is sometimes people in publishing say writers won't write if they don't get paid. And I think that is true for certain types of nonfiction without any question.
Right.
And it is also true that some writers can't find the time to write without some sort of subsidy, undeniably. Not to say writers should not get paid, but I think that many, many writers will write and write well regardless of what the financial environment might be. The work is what matters to them, and they have to write it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've written quite a few books myself, and I don't do it ever for money. I don't send out an outline and ask for a publisher to approve or a committee to approve a grant or anything. I just write it because I think it's important to me, and hopefully it's for somebody else too. So, that's the way it is with us serious people.
No, I think that's it's what is it. I mean, what you're working in is art as opposed to the commercial, and I think that differentiates, you know, that the impetus for doing it is the driver of the human soul and the
heart.
There
you go. That's right. We talk about the human soul, but that won't fly in New York commercial publishing.
Well, no.
Agent won't take on a human soul.
Unless it's, unless it's a saleable soul, you know.
Unless it's a whore's soul. Whatever. I don't know if that's
right.
A clash.
Yeah. I know. You may not want to go there.
No, I think we'll just let that alone.
Right.
But the great spirit out there in the world of writers, and a great frustration too, but, you know, we keep on. People are very brave, you know, in their spirit, and I'm sure they're fighting depression, and certainly rejections are all too common. But I'm very proud is not the word, but I don't know what the right word is of today's writers, and these small press writers.
Well, I think maybe I don't know what the word is either, but I think that I understand what you mean by that, and I think it's really important. Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk to me about Pushcart. Is there any one more thing you wanted to say before we close?
No, it's great talking to you after so many years. I'm glad to see both of us are still functioning and thriving. And I'm going to keep the Pushcart going as long as I can, which I hope will be some time.
Well, I hope it's been great talking to you. Yeah, I hope you continue to do it ad infinitum. And, maybe even some people who are listening to this who might not have heard of or looked at the Pushcart Prize book in a while should go take a look at the latest anthology and get in touch with Bill Henderson at the Pushcart Press if you want to give some money to this particular nonprofit.
That's an idea.
Yeah.
And we do have a website, you know, pushcartprize.com. So it's all laid out there for people.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate
it. Thanks a lot, David. I really appreciate it.
This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and the publishing industry. I've been talking to Bill Henderson, the founder and editor of the Pushcart Press and the Pushcart Prize.